Hi, this is Frank Connolly from MindEdge, and we are here today with Dan Kennedy, Associate Professor of Journalism at Northeastern University in Boston. Dan is also a nationally known media critic and author, and his latest book, The Return of the Moguls, will be out in 2018. So welcome, Dan.
Thank you, Frank.
And we're going to talk today about a survey that MindEdge sponsored on the issue of critical thinking, and in particular critical thinking in the online world. And just to give you some of the basics, it was an online survey of 1,000 young adults ages 19 through 30, both current students and recent graduates, ranging from folks in a two-year degree program all the way up to folks who have done or are doing postdoctoral work. The goal of the survey was to determine how these folks feel about their own critical thinking skills, the importance of critical thinking skills, both in the workplace and in the online environment. And then finally, the survey contained 9 knowledge questions, questions that actually had right or wrong answers. During the course of the survey, all of the respondents answered those questions, and we got a sense of how well their critical thinking skills corresponded with how they thought their critical thinking skills were. So the 3 major takeaways that we had from this survey is, first, young folks, I guess we can call them millennials, feel that critical thinking skills are extremely important, particularly in the job market. About roughly 64% say that critical thinking is very, very important to their future job prospects. But they don't feel particularly confident about their own critical thinking skills. Only about 35% feel that they are well-trained in critical thinking, and only about 36% feel confident in their ability to distinguish what's real and what's false online. 2 more points. Roughly half of the respondents in the survey say they share online information either very or fairly often. And a large majority of them, the ones who share, say they share very often, 62% of them say that they have accidentally shared incorrect information. The question there is, what's the correlation? Finally, one area which is seems to be consistent with the larger national debate, these respondents, large majorities of them, see fake news, quote unquote fake news, as a serious problem, and seem to be more confident about their ability to see what's real and fake in the news environment than they necessarily do in an academic environment. So that's a quick summary of the results, but I'd like to get Dan's take on them. First, is this surprising to you?
No. I must say, as somebody who's worked in journalism my whole life, I have often shared false information, and then you end up having to run a correction after the fact. One of the things that struck me about this survey is that although the respondents seem to lack a certain amount of self-confidence, their skills, their understanding of how to weed out bad information from good actually seem to be at a pretty high level. So if they simply apply those skills when they're evaluating information, it looked like they would do pretty well.
There are nine, as I said before, there's 9 knowledge questions in this survey. And surprisingly high proportion, 44% of the respondents got 5 or fewer correct, which you'd think would translate to a failing grade. And yet, in terms of distinguishing fake news, and they seem to be fairly good at it, as you mentioned. So I guess one question is, do you think that this is a lack of confidence in their skills or a lack of skill?
I think a lot of it is a lack of confidence in their skills because, you know, some of this is not rocket science. And I think that students and instructors and civilians and everybody else kind of know the basics of how to separate out good information from bad information. You know, does it look fishy? If it looks fishy, maybe I ought to check this out at Snopes.com or another fact-checking site. Are other news organizations that I've heard of reporting this? I mean, these are fairly simple things to do, and I think people tend to be fairly good at it. You asked me how my students are dealing with this. You know, one point of comparison that I really can't make is I will not connect with my students on Facebook. I just don't think that's a good practice. So I can't really compare their Facebook habits to those of friends and family members and things like that. But I have to tell you, I am often struck at how Facebook friends, even people who are retired journalists, even people who sometimes are retired investigative journalists, will share things that are obviously from fake news sources. And at least anecdotally, from what I've seen, my students are a fair amount savvier than that. They do have a sense of what's quality, what's trustworthy, and what isn't. I don't know whether they consciously have a checklist that they go through to help them with this, but I don't really see them often succumbing to the worst of the worst that's online.
Now, of course, your students are students in journalism, so they...
Yes.
They
so
assume
automatically they're smarter.
That's right. They certainly have a more investigative bent and are more inclined to ask questions, at least if the ones who are passing your classes. From what you might see of other students around this campus or other campuses, do you have a feeling that the level of digital literacy is as high as it might be among your students?
I would suspect that it probably is because... I mean, every student here is a digital native, and they regularly need to separate out good information from bad information. It could be that when it comes to news, their definition of what constitutes good information is different from that of journalism students, because with journalism students, there's a certain amount of traditionalism at work. Brand names like the Washington Post and the New York Times and the Boston Globe really means something to them. And when you get beyond journalism students, there may be other sources of news and information that they're going to that are not necessarily automatically associated with quality. And yet, you know, I know that students often will look at alternative sources such as Vice News and things like that. And, you know, a lot of those are very reliable sources of information as well. And, you know, let's not forget, when you say that 62% of the respondents say that they have shared something at one time or another that turned out to be false, that could have been a story in the New York Times.
That's right.
We are not perfect
That's
by
right.
any stretch of the imagination.
That's right. Yeah, that is a very good point. One of the things that did strike me, we talked about a little bit, was the relatively high percentages, proportions of respondents who could single out the signs of fake news and see what qualifies as fake news. Those are all roughly three quarters in each case to get the quote-unquote correct answer. But what is interesting somewhat is that if you look at folks who have higher levels of educational attainment, the postdocs, the doctorals, the folks with postgraduate degrees, they tend to be somewhat less confident, or say they are less confident in their abilities than folks with a two-year college degree or a bachelor's. Again, I'm wondering if you think that that might, again, speak to the idea of a lack of confidence rather than a lack of skill.
Yeah, I mean, I think it definitely does, because it could very well be that as your educational attainment grows ever more impressive, one of the things that may come with that is just simply a heightened appreciation of what a complicated world we live in, and how difficult sometimes it can be to separate the good from the bad. But I don't think that it would speak to their lack of ability to separate this out. You know, what may have happened is they're, you know, doing higher level research and trying to get to the bottom of something. They may all have had an experience of having been taken in by something that looked very good and reliable, and they've remembered that, and they're now asking themselves, how would I do at preventing myself from falling into that trap in the future?
Turning a little bit more in detail to the topic of fake news, it's obviously something that's in the real news quite a bit. And I would imagine that you've had some pretty interesting discussions with your students about it. What advice do you give them in terms of not just how to identify fake news themselves, but how to deal with people who are trying to spread fake news to them as sources or as elected officials?
Well, you know, that's a really good question. And I can't say that it's one that I have wrestled with extensively. Certainly, we've all talked about how to avoid falling into the trap of fake news ourselves, but I think we are living at a moment when it is extremely difficult to persuade other people that what you're trying to share with me is fake. I had an experience just last week with somebody on Facebook who I don't know that I've ever met her face to face, but I've known her on Facebook for years. She's a good, reasonable person. And she was sharing some crazy story that came from a site that looked dubious to me, and she kept defending it. And I don't know, maybe there was some work I needed to do and I didn't want to do, so I started diving into it a little bit deeper. And, you know, before I knew it, I had discovered that the person who was perpetrating this fake news had written a book about 9/11 being an inside job, false flag operation. And so I showed her that, and she still wasn't willing to back down completely. She took the assertion that she had put up on Facebook and put a question mark after it. I mean, that's the best I could do after trying to talk her in off this crazy conspiracy theory that she was promulgating. So it's really difficult. It's really difficult. And of course, we now have a president who is espousing fake news. And I think that the news media struggles horrendously with how do you report that? Do you constantly have to point out that the president is simply spouting falsehoods? It's a very difficult dilemma. I mean, after all, until recently, we had a national security director who was putting forth the fake news story that Hillary Clinton was somehow involved in some sort of a child sex ring. And he was putting this out on Twitter, and
General Flynn has gone away now.
General Flynn, he's now gone. So it's we're at a very weird moment, that's for sure.
Are you optimistic or pessimistic?
Oh, I'm pessimistic. Yeah. But what am I pessimistic about? Could you be more specific?
Well,
I'm just generally pessimistic about many things.
It's the Irish genes, Dan. I know.
Yes.
I get that too. But I guess I'm curious to get your take on whether we are going to return to a more normal national discourse and a more normal set of relations between press and not just White House, but public figures in general. And if you think things might get normal again, what's it going to take to do that?
Well, I don't know the answer to that. One thing that I would point out is that fake news is as old as news. And there's a talk I give on fake news in which I show that our commonly understood story of the Boston Massacre was fake news. The New York Sun reported in the 1830s that we had landed on the moon. Fake news. The New York Journal's reporting on the explosion of the USS Maine in Cuba in the 1890s was fake news, and that they blamed it on the Spanish and had a famous front page engraving of the wires coming to the shore and how it was blown up. And, you know, we now know that none of that happened, and it led to a war. So what the internet has done is it has hugely increased the quantity and the velocity of fake news, but there's nothing particularly new about it. And there have always been small but not insignificant percentages of the population who believe this stuff. So, yeah, I'm a little pessimistic because I think the internet has just created so much more of it that that it's kind of overwhelmed the system.
Which gets to the question of, is there a particular role for higher education to play in whether it's formal classes on critical thinking or digital literacy, or simply fostering a more questioning attitude among students? Is there something that institutions of higher education like Northeastern and others can do to help address this problem?
Yes, and I think that absolutely we need to be aware of it. We need to talk about it with our students. We need to teach it. And I would say that it's at all levels. My wife is an elementary school library teacher, and one of the things they talk about is digital literacy. But I don't think that can stop in the sixth grade. I think we have to continue with that right through secondary school and right into higher education. I don't think it's something that we can ignore at any level.
Well, I think that kind of wraps it up for today. We've been talking with Dan Kennedy of Northeastern University and renowned blogger and media critic and author. Thanks for your time, Dan, and we'll see you all soon.
Thank you very much, Frank.